Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Christina Campbell, and I represent the petitioner in this case, Jose Barahona. The issue before this court is whether Mr. Barahona is inadmissible to the United States for having provided material support to a Tier 3 terrorist organization. The first argument raised by Mr. Barahona in his petition is that the use of the kitchen in his family home to cook food does not constitute affording material support within the meaning of the statute. For this court to hold that the occupation of Mr. Barahona's home and the forced use of his kitchen by the guerrillas rises to the level of material support reads the term material out of the statute. This court must consider the ordinary meaning of the words used. In this case, our position is that the word material qualifies the word support. They must be read together. Avoiding unintended and absurd results is a deeply rooted rule of statutory construction. It's our position that the facts of this case demonstrate that the occupation of the home, the use of the kitchen by the guerrillas in Mr. Barahona's case, does not amount to material support. We believe that the substantial evidence does not support a finding that Mr. Barahona afforded material support within the meaning of the statute.
If you will, address the deference, if we must give to the BIA, because it seems to be a very high degree of deference.
Yes.
That we have to give to their decision, even if we disagree in terms of whether this should or should not be, that seems to be very high.
Yes.
How do you overcome that?
Yes, Your Honor. Regarding deference, does Your Honor mean deference in the case before us or deference in the matter of SK precedential case?
It helps with the case before us.
Yes. Well, in the case before us, the board did rely on the matter of SK.
I do mean generally,
yes,
the deference that we must,
right,
accord to BIA,
yes,
and the level of deference,
right,
and how you overcome,
right,
that deference, even,
right,
if we disagree. Because,
yes,
it seems to be a very high degree of deference,
yes,
that we have to accord to BIA.
Yes, right. The standard, I believe, is that you must defer to the agency's discretion unless the agency is arbitrary, capricious, and contrary to law. In the decision, which is in the record of the board in this case, the board did rely on the precedent decision of SK. However, regarding the material support issue, in SK, the board did not reach the issue of what constitutes material support. The board actually said that they declined to reach that issue in that case. They also stated that trivial or insubstantial amounts of assistance to terrorist organizations, whether or not the statute extends that far, is a valid issue, and that the argument that material should be given independent content is no means frivolous. So it's our position that because the board did not reach the meaning of material in the matter of SK, that this court is not required to defer to the board's decision in this matter. They didn't interpret the meaning of material. They did not discuss their reasoning why they didn't reach that issue. That's arbitrary, capricious, and contrary to law in the petitioner's view.
Well, when you say it didn't reach the meaning of it, it seems to have concluded that it was material support on the basis of what it characterized as substantial evidence. So how would you reach the meaning of it? I mean, in terms of defining,
sure,
what it is.
Yes, I understand.
If they, in fact, concluded that's what it was.
Regarding what it means to have been material support, for support and material, in matter of Sinkar, which is not binding on this court, it's persuasive, but also there's a dissent from Judge Fisher in that case, and he discusses at length his view on what it means to have engaged in material support. His view is that Congress did not intend the statute to embrace acts that are not of importance or relevant to terrorism. The plain meaning of the statute, again, material qualifies support. Congress could have chosen to say any support or just plain support. Again, because the board has not interpreted the statute, which is their job, they have not said what is material support. Again, I believe that on these facts, there is just a blank statement that, yes, this is material support, but there is not a discussion of what is material and why the facts of this case
he
fall.
He provided to the guerrillas the use of his kit for 1 year.
Your Honor,
is that not material support?
Your Honor, I believe the statute states that an actor is required to afford material support. Afford is to give or to provide. In this case, the petitioner's position is that he didn't provide or give anything to the guerrillas. The use of his home was taken by force. The record reflects that he was living in an occupied zone, and the immigration judge did make a factual finding that he was living in a zone that was occupied by guerrillas during a civil war. His home was not the only home occupied. The entire village was occupied. The guerrillas were using not just his home, but other homes. He testified that virtually every home in the zone was occupied by the guerrillas. So it's our position that he did not provide anything.
Is your position that he had to cooperate with the occupiers or that they would be killed?
That when you say they would be killed, do you mean the petitioner and his family?
By the terrorists, the occupiers.
That the occupiers would be killed?
No, that your client would have been.
Oh, yes. Yes, Your Honor. My client stated on the record, and the judge made a factual finding, that he was under duress when this occurred, and he did state that he feared for his life. His father was murdered after rejecting the terrorists. When he told them they could not use the home, he was murdered. Other members of his family were murdered. He also testified that people were routinely murdered and their bodies left in front of their homes in the village as a warning sign of persons who dared to stand up against the guerrillas. So yes, he was in fear for his life. He was under duress, and he did not have a choice.
Excuse me, go ahead. I'm probably asking the question he's getting ready to ask. Hadn't Congress said that the argument you're making now is one that should be directed to the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Homeland Security? That if it's a question of duress, they're the ones that take that into consideration, but that's not a question for courts.
Is Your Honor referring to the waiver provision?
I'm referring to Section B1 or BI in 1182.
Right. There is a waiver provision for duress that was enacted into the there's a general waiver provision, the BI section. That's a general waiver provision. It doesn't discuss duress. Secretary Chertoff, in the exercise of his discretion, issued a regulation stating that or deciding to include duress as a discretionary exemption. However, my reading of the statute is that, again, that waiver provision duress is not dispositive. The waiver provision exists independently. And I also believe that the Secretary's decision to extend the waiver provision to the duress was a misreading of the statute. I think it is premised on the assumption that the statute doesn't encompass an implicit duress exemption, which is our second argument.
Then you want us to recognize one.
Well, I ask this court to not foreclose the possibility that there is an implicit duress exemption, and that's our argument in Negussi, or reliance on the Negussi case, which interpreted the persecutor bar, which similarly statute is silent on the issue of duress. But when the Supreme Court in that case remanded the case to the board, they stated that Congress did not need to have provided an explicit duress exemption in order for one to exist, and so the position on whether or not a duress exemption exists, the board, again, similar to the interpretation of materiality, has not spoken on that issue. They, again, in SK, simply stated that the statute is clearly drafted. They have not engaged in a reasoned discussion. They have not interpreted the statute in a meaningful way, which this court is not required to give deference to. So our position on the duress argument is that because Congress has not spoken precisely to the direct, precise question at issue, in this case, voluntariness, this court is not required to foreclose that possibility.
But if we decline to write the duress exemption into the thing, is that the end of your case?
No, Your Honor, because I believe, again, our primary argument, our first argument is the materiality issue. I believe that on these facts,
Is that your argument, that it's de minimis? What he did was de minimis?
That it was de minimis, it was involuntary, it was under duress. Again,
what if we reject the duress exception?
I believe.
What are you left with, de minimis?
The fact that the support that was afforded in this case is not.
That there really wasn't any support at all. De minimis.
That's correct, Your Honor. That it doesn't.
But as Judge Wynn pointed out, he let him cook in the kitchen for a year.
He did, as the record reflects, he did not have a choice. He didn't let them. He didn't permit them. They basically.
Well, you say it was under duress, but
yes.
If we reject the duress exception,
yes,
then it's you're back to de minimis, and then we have to decide that them using his kitchen for a year to prepare food for the terrorists was de minimis. And if we're unable to do that, what are you left with?
A plain language reading of the statute, Your Honor.
Well, you've still got an avenue of relief, as Judge Traxler pointed out.
Actually, Your Honor, this is not before this court, but as a matter of fact, that the DHS has declined to exercise the duress exemption in this case. My client was notified of that. The petitioner was notified of that in March. So there is no relief left for the petitioner.
There's no relief left at all.
There is no relief left. He will be removed to El Salvador. The DHS made a finding that he was under duress, but in the totality of circumstances declined to provide him with an exemption. So as a matter of fact, and it is unreviewable by this court, the department has declined to exercise the exemption in his case.
And they also, but they did more than cook in the kitchen. He did more, let him cook in the kitchen. He actually gave him directions on how to get through the jungle or something, didn't he?
His testimony was that they were asking directions to go to other towns. He also testified that he didn't know why they were going there or what they were intending to do there. So the judge did make a factual finding in his decision that the only issue on which he was determining that there was material support was the use of the home to cook kitchen, the use of the kitchen to cook food. So it was the judge's opinion that the using the shortcuts were not material support because he did not know. It was not material. It wasn't to the issue, to what was going on, the Civil War.
Let me understand at least where I think you've just gone with this, and that is that if we decide that there's no duress or involuntary defense, that act is a discretionary waiver with the Secretary of State of Homeland Security, then you're left with your argument on material support, and that is going to fall squarely on the question of it, whether that support, as a matter of law, was de minimis.
Yes.
And that's your argument. But then to get to there, you have to satisfy that factor that the BIA's deference is very high in this instance. And for us to go against that, we're going to have to really come to the conclusion that allowing someone to cook, forgetting about the rest, and voluntary as bad as it seems, mm-hmm. just not an exception
yes.
For a year or any other factors, is de minimis. That's what you're asking us to do, if we reach the determination that the rest and involuntariness
yeah.
cannot be there.
Yes, as I've stated, I don't believe this court is required to defer to the board's reasoning in this case because, again, they have not interpreted what it means for what sort of conduct is encompassed by the statute, what level of conduct rises to material. Again, they specifically stated in SK that the argument that trivial or insubstantial amounts of assistance were de minimis, as the court says, is not material support, is a valid one, but they declined to reach it. And so my argument, or the petitioner's argument to this court, is that, you know, that is an issue in this case. It is the conduct. It was not the manifest intent of Congress to encompass any support. The government conceded in their brief, they actually stated almost any amount of support for a terrorist organization may be material support. They did not say that it must encompass all conduct. And in fact, a reading such that would encompass that rationale is overly broad and virtually limitless. It could encompass pretty much anything. The rest of the statute, material support statute, gives examples of conduct that is really of extreme gravity. Again, in this case, the petitioner did not provide material support. That is our argument. Is that so? That's why this court, in our opinion, doesn't need to defer to the board in SK or on the facts of this case. I don't have anything further unless the court has any further questions.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Campbell.
Great, thank
Let's
you.
Hear from Mr. Cantor.
Ethan Cantor, Department of Justice, on behalf of the respondent in this case. I'll begin with the question about deference because counsel indicated that the standard of review or the degree of deference is to defer to the agency's discretion unless arbitrary, capricious, contrary to law. There are actually two applicable standards of review, one related to factual findings and the other with respect to legal determinations, relevant to admissibility, which the material support bar is a ground of inadmissibility. So taking the factual findings first, the applicable standard of review would be the substantial evidence test, which would require the party appealing the decision to demonstrate that the record evidence would compel reversal of the factual conclusions reached by the board. However, I would submit that there are no disputes as to the facts, the factual findings made. It's a question of the application of law to fact. And in this case, this court's Gomez decision held that with regard to inadmissibility provisions, the legal burden is that the inadmissibility is conclusive unless it is demonstrated to be manifestly contrary to law. So it's a very high burden, both factually and legally, for the petitioner to meet. Addressing counsel's, I think, primary argument that there's an arbitrariness in the decision reached by the board because there's no level of conduct or degree or specificity with regard to the amount of material support that would render the applicant here inadmissible. Congress had two avenues in terms of administering the laws that are designed to exclude or render inadmissible aliens involved in terrorist activity. One would be to draw specific lines, to circumscribe narrow or exclusive categories. Alternatively, Congress could define broad concepts of what material support is, for example, by setting out a list of non-exclusive examples, and then leave it to the executive branch, in this case the Attorney General and his delegates in the immigration court, to apply on a case-by-case basis, or waive the provisions altogether. And there, that discretionary authority was delegated to the secretaries of state or homeland security, and the provision is 8 U.S. Code 1182D3BI, which the court referred to earlier.
So in essence, what is material support is whatever Homeland Security or Secretary of State or BIA says it is, and we really don't have an opportunity to review it because they never defined it or they never set out what level of support would constitute it, or does the character of the support constitute material as opposed to non-material support?
Well, I think that's I think what the board has done is to reference the statutory examples. The statute is the guide, and it sets out some 8 or 9 examples of what constitutes material support. In the published decision matter of SK,
does it have one in there about letting the terrorists cook in your kitchen?
It doesn't reference a kitchen. However, the courts have found, and the decision by the Third
People
Circuit.
People are saying that if you do anything for the terrorists at the point of a gun, you're inadmissible. Isn't that right?
The petitioner is conflating two issues.
That's what the government's position is. The Attorney General's position here, Mr. Holder's position, is if you do something to cooperate with the terrorists at the point of a gun, you're inadmissible.
Yes, if you material.
That's what he did. Essentially, he let him use his kitchen at the point of a gun.
Well, there's
they,
two.
They killed his father.
There's
and
two.
The IJ accepted that.
Yes.
He did it at the point of a gun.
Yes.
And under duress.
Yes.
And so he's inadmissible.
Yes.
So that would
any
mean,
kind of material support provided,
material support.
Whether it's provided that, under duress or not.
That's right. That would mean that the pilot of a hijacked plane who cooperates with the hijackers at the point of a gun and flies the plane to a safe landing, perhaps, and saves the people on the plane, would have cooperated with the hijackers at a point of a gun, and he would be inadmissible to come to the United States.
I think that the
for the rest of his life.
I think that the statute is broad enough and technically susceptible to Your Honor's reading, and whether or not the prosecutor, the government would assert such a position in that case is for another day. I don't think this case is one that involves the outer reaches, the outer limits of the material support statute.
I think this is not a close case. Well, the IJ said it was an arrest and involuntary, right?
Yes, but to assert that something is not material support if it is involuntary.
And he credited the testimony
yes.
of Mr. Barahona, who yes. said that if he hadn't let him use his kitchen, he'd been killed.
Yes,
and his own father was killed.
Yes, the immigration judge.
And his choice was to let him use his kitchen.
Yes.
Or be killed.
Yes, yes, and he cooperated and allowed his house to be used under duress. That's what the immigration judge found. It's a question of where. Has Congress afforded an avenue for relief? Congress has set out only two avenues for relief. One is in the material support provision itself, which relates to the knowledge exception. If the individual had no knowledge or should not reasonably have known that the support was going to a terrorist organization, the material support provision itself would afford an exception. That claim has not been made by this petitioner. The other in the alternative provision, a separate provision than the material support bar under which Congress has given to the executive branch, delegated the authority for a discretionary waiver. Counsel indicated that when Secretary Chertoff implemented that provision with respect to material support provided in duress cases, that was a misreading of the statute. That argument is not before this court. That issue is not before this court, but I would submit that is manifestly incorrect. The statute is explicit in terms of authorizing the secretary to afford support in cases of involuntary conduct. The statute itself, section 1182D3BI, uses the term voluntary with the obvious and clear implication that involuntary acts are not covered in the limitation. There's a limitation in that provision with respect to voluntary support. Clearly, then, the statute was not precluding a waiver in cases of involuntary support. The executive branch published that waiver in the Federal Register, and
I think your argument is clear, at least in terms of how it has been interpreted and set out, where I see some fuzziness in the question of do we clearly separate the question of whether it's involuntary or under duress from the material support. I see some fuzziness in the material support when you use the word let use the kitchen. And by that I mean it clearly is material support if you go in and you cook meals for them and you do things affirmative. But if you fail to keep them from using the kitchen, or if you determine that you can't keep them from using, it's really not a question of involuntary or duress. It's a question of you don't have a choice. You can't stop them from using your kitchen. And is that, in terms of material support, it would seem to me that ought to be factored in as to, because I would think that Congress, in talking about material support, of course, we all know the plain example. I mean, if you hand someone a gun or something like that, those are clear. I mean, that's. But this gets fuzzy to me when if you're telling me that if a person has a kitchen and a group of guerrillas come in with guns and said, we are going to use your kitchen, and if you just remain silent and sit over there and mind your business and live, as opposed to getting to say, oh, no, you can't, because one day I may go up and can't have to be deported and then get shot. Is that where we are? I mean, isn't there something in the determination of what is material support that there has to be something you are doing that furthers the giving of support, not that you are, not just something you are not doing, which is preventing them from using your kitchen?
I think that is an excellent question, Your Honor. In any scenario, there is going to be, for example, there's a knock on the door and you look out the window and there are men standing with guns and you open the door. Are you doing so voluntarily or because you're afraid that...
What if you don't open the door and they knock the door open, come over and take over your kitchen? And you do nothing to keep them from doing it. You've never done anything affirmative, not even tell them you can use it. In fact, you yell out, you can't use it, you can't use it. But they use your kitchen, and you provided the support because they're using your kitchen for a year.
Well, there is no evidence in this record to indicate that the petitioner did absolutely nothing. Quite the contrary. The record displays... instances in which the petitioner did engage in acts. He noted, for example, when they came in the middle of the night in a storm, he allowed them to sleep in his kitchen. When he traveled away from his house and...
Right there, that's why I want to know about the allowed to sleep. Now, if you're telling me they came in the middle of the night, got on his floor and slept, and he didn't do anything, is that what you're saying?
Well,
or he said, come in, you can sleep on my floor for tonight. Or
petitioner,
I will allow you to sleep on my floor if you don't kill my family. Is that the evidence? That's what I'm trying to understand. What is the, if it's fuzzy in there?
I think what Your Honor is getting to is the question of engaging in an act with some volition, whether intentionally or agreeably, voluntarily or not, or a simply an involuntary act such as, you know, where...
But we don't want to get into involuntary arrest. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about failure to act, failure to prevent them from doing
something. There are both, I would submit, there are both acts of commission and acts of omission.
And that's where the word de minimis comes in, isn't it? Isn't it? If it is, you come in with a gun and you point it at them, that's a different level of act than if... You don't come in with a gun and says, I need some help in here, and you go start around helping. Isn't that where the question of de minimis support comes in?
No. The question is whether it is a means to accomplish a terrorist activity. In Sing Khao, the one-time provision of modest amount of food and shelter, one time, was held to be material because it afforded material support to the recipient. Okay, the amount of act or volition involved in providing that support is not the focus of the statute.
I think we're both kind of going to say, I'm just trying to see if there is a line. The provision of food, yes, if I hand you a bowl of cereal and you eat it, but what happens if the bowl is on the table, I put it there, he walks in with his gun, sits at the table and starts eating out of that bowl. Have I provided him with material support? That's the question. And is there evidence of that here? Is what I want to know. You say they're affirmative acts, but it seems that what I'm hearing is there may be equal evidence, at least some evidence that says he's just a standby. He can't do anything. It almost begs the question, could he stop him?
Well,
that's the question.
That is the question, because what is the difference between not resisting and allowing under duress? What is the difference to say, well, he did not resist, and therefore he did not do anything. He allowed them under duress. This record shows many instances in which he did not act or took actions that facilitated the continued use of his home. He did not resist the guerrillas.
He wisely did not.
He wisely did not.
He wisely chose to live.
That is correct. That is correct. And the statutory scheme.
And I want to ask this because this is what troubles me to some extent. And I tend to look at cases holistically and how we as a court act. We go out of our way to find instances in which there's prejudice or which there's some harm. Or we, even when we find there's an error, we go and say, well, it's harmless error, whatever. And here, or inevitable discovery rules, good faith, and things like that in the criminal world. And here we're looking at an instance that we could probably come to every conclusion that it doesn't matter what this man does, they are going to use his kitchen for 1 year. Didn't matter if he says you can use it or not. He can scream, he can do whatever he wants to do. They're going to kill him and use it. Why would we not import that same kind of reasoning in this situation?
Because the neighboring provision in the very same subsection, which is 1182A3, a neighboring subsection related to the communist and totalitarian party inadmissibility, uses the term, you're inadmissible if you're a member, unless your membership was involuntary. Congress, in the very same subsection, has demonstrated that it knows how to include an exception for involuntary conduct if it wishes to do so. It did not do so in the material support provision. Alternatively, in the exemption provision, D3BI, it did expressly use the term voluntary, and the executive branch has so interpreted by publishing in the Federal Register a discretionary waiver in cases of duress.
And involuntary subsumes the concept of failure to act. Is that right?
Involuntary. That's correct.
Meaning if that bowl of cereal is on the table, I put it there, they walk in with their guns, and I do nothing. And they sit down and eat that cereal, under your definition, that is material support.
Yes.
And there's really nothing that the courts can do under your proposition. He has the right to go to the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Homeland Security. And if they don't give him any relief, that's it. If Congress wants to put voluntary men that they can do that.
That's right. They can amend the statute.
This is not the final straw, so to speak, because he has that avenue of relief at the Secretary of State's
Council
office
indicated,
and the Secretary of Homeland Security's office.
Council indicated that he was denied that relief.
Right.
However, he had that avenue, and that's in the discretion of the executive branch. But I would end with this point, Your Honor, and it comes down to it's the petitioner's burden to show that the ground of inadmissibility does not apply by a preponderance of evidence. The immigration judge found he did not meet that burden, and the board ended its decision with the same point, that he did not meet that burden. The record shows that there were, beyond the use of the kitchen, there was having his house used for lodging, in which the record, I believe, shows they came in the night and he admitted them to the house, which is an act, and that he showed them shortcuts where when he traveled to and from the city, from his village, and was interrogated by Salvadoran army soldiers, do you know where the guerrillas are? He indicated, I told them I did not know.
Did the IJ or the BIA rely on that?
The IJ declined to make a legal conclusion that that constituted material support. That legal conclusion, as I set forth in the brief, is incorrect. The board cited the fact of the giving the shortcut guidance in its decision. Excuse me?
You say the IJ was wrong on that?
The IJ was wrong legally, but at a minimum,
you didn't cross petition on that. You don't have a cross appeal or a cross petition.
Well, the board's decision, I'm not contending that the court must rely on that in order to uphold the board. I think the The use of the kitchen is more than sufficient. What I am noting is that the board also found he did not meet his burden, and the record demonstrates and can provide support for his inability to meet the burden, in part based on also allowing his house to be used for lodging and giving shortcut guidance. So
in essence, you're saying we don't have to decide the bowl of cereal example I gave you, because in fact you're saying there's evidence here he did something affirmatively, showing the shortcuts and other things.
I think the record shows, even with regard to the use of his kitchen, there is an act of allowing. Yes, it's under duress. Yes, it's involuntary. But it is a year-long, consistent, day-in, day-out, the use of his house, in which he had clearly had opportunities to seek out the Army. Indeed, he was interrogated by the Army and chose to tell them the opposite of what in fact was true and might have led to the cessation of the use of his house for that purpose. I do not think this is a close case. I think it falls squarely within the bounds set forth by Congress conceptually as to what means any means to accomplish terrorist activity. Clearly, using a kitchen for a year helps further the goals of the terrorists. And for that reason, the court should uphold the board in this case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cantor. Ms. Campbell, you have some time remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I would like to take my remaining time first to correct a statement made by Mr. Cantor regarding the petitioner's statements to the military on page 58 of the record of the joint appendix. In response to the question by the government whether or not he ever went to the Salvadoran military to let them know of the guerrillas' presence in their town, the petitioner's testimony was, "Every time I would go to the city, there were army checkpoints, and they would stop you and ask you, were there any guerrillas? I mean, where in your zone? And I would say, why denying it? I would say yes. But they knew that. They were always on the move, and I always was telling, I don't know where they're camping at, because they were always on the move. But they knew. They knew that they were in my, they knew that, and they knew my zone was under control of the guerrillas." So it's not factually correct to say that my client had the opportunity to go to the Army and tell them and did not. I think the court's observations regarding his...
How did they find out that he was... He had allowed his kitchen to be used.
The government?
Yes.
Mr. Barahona had filed an application for asylum when he first...
He told him.
Yes, he used it as the basis for his reasonable fear, his well-founded fear of persecution. It's on his asylum application.
He hadn't told him that. But is that all the evidence? I'm trying to ask. Does anybody else say he used that kitchen? He's the one that told him his kitchen he allowed to be used for years.
Yes, when he was explaining why he had a well-founded fear of persecution in El Salvador and why he feared being removed to El Salvador.
He just didn't understand the law. He didn't understand that duress and voluntariness wouldn't go in his favor on this.
I believe at the time he completed his asylum application in the 80s, this was not even an issue of law. So it wasn't a matter of him not understanding the law. And it was in the record and on these facts. We don't believe and never have believed that this constitutes material support. He also was truthful and explaining, again, his reasons for applying for asylum. And I think Your Honor's observations regarding commission and omission are apt. And regarding could he have stopped the guerrillas? Again, he testified that there were hundreds, if not thousands, of guerrillas in his zone, that they were armed and that he was unarmed. That it was not
my
possible.
My questions went to the bowl of cereal example, where
yes.
You got it on the table there, and it's just full of cereal, and then they come in with guns, sit at your table and eat it, and you yes. Say absolutely nothing or do nothing.
Right.
And from what I understand from the other side's perspective is, that's not all the cases here, because he in fact showed them particular paths for shortcuts and did other affirmative acts, because he went and got them a fresh bowl of cereal after they finished this one or did some other stuff.
Again, I believe that the cereal analogy is not applicable to the facts here. He testified that he did show them shortcuts again to other towns, but that he did not know what they were going for, what they were doing. He did not provide any support to them. And again, the judge made a factual finding that the only form of, in his opinion, was material support was the use of the kitchen.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Campbell.
Thank you, Your Honors.
We're going to come down and greet counsel and then take a short break. Before we do that, we have some distinguished guests in the courtroom that I want to recognize. Julie King, who is the wife of Judge King, is here with us, and Ms. Emily King Schaefer, daughter of Judge King, is here, and two granddaughters of Judge King, cousin Katie Schaefer and cousin Jane Schaefer. And I call them cousins because they're my cousins. And I want you to know that now it is a matter of the official record of this court that we are kin, and so denying it will not do you any good from now on. We also have Ms. Brooks Davis, who is here, who is holding her father to her promise, his promise made years ago that when she was in the fourth grade, he would bring her to court. And Ms. Davis, we're glad to have you here, too. So we'll come down and greet counsel, take about a 5 or 10 minute break, and come back and finish up.
This honorable court will take a brief recess.